If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Remember the Stephen King book, Misery? This is that, but worse.
No.
Because it involves someone that started as a child, and the story explodes with them as an adult, allegedly being held captive by that. A woman accused of keeping her stepson locked in a room for 20 years. 20 actual years of his life gone. Isn't sitting in a cell right now. Yes, this goes to another fine story of our justice system working as working as it does. She's not in a cell right now. She's home, free, wearing a GPS monitoring, she says, is uncomfortable.
Aww.
And now, thanks to a ruling in a Connecticut courtroom, she knows exactly where that same victim is hiding, because apparently she has a constitutional right to confront her accuser. Let's back this up. What kind of world are we living in where that sentence even makes sense? This is the story of Kimberly Sullivan, and if you haven't heard this one yet, buckle up, buttercup, because it's one of those cases that reminds you just how fragile the concept of justice really is in this country. Back in February of 25, firefighters were called to a house on Blake Street in Waterbury, Connecticut. There was smoke coming from an upstairs window. Pretty standard call until they broke opened the door and found a man, thin as a rail, barely conscious, dehydrated, shaking, malnourished to the point of collapse, 5'9", 68 pounds, 68. You don't get that thin unless somebody's been starving you. Turns out the fire wasn't an accident. He'd set it himself because it was the only way out, the only way someone would come looking. He told investigators he lit that fire because he wanted his freedom. Imagine that. You have to literally burn your prison down just to get someone to notice that you exist. The man? This wasn't like a 12-year-old child. This wasn't, I mean, that would be an extremely unhealthy weight for a 12-year-old child. He was 32. 32 years old. And here's the part that knocks the wind out of you. He'd been missing since he was 11. He was Kimberly Sullivan's stepson. She, and I put this in air quotes, raised him, or more accurately, kept him, allegedly. According to police, she pulled him out of school in the fourth grade. Neighbors say they never saw him again. The home had a small locked room on the second floor, and that's where he lived. No heat, no air conditioning, no bathroom. When investigators got inside, they said it was one of the most disgusting, inhumane things they'd ever seen. Trash everywhere, human waste in bottles, the smell unbearable. He told them he was given food maybe once or twice a day, if she remembered, usually crackers, cereal, maybe rice. He said he didn't even remember what it felt like to be full. He hadn't seen a doctor or dentist since childhood, and if he asked questions or tried to leave, she'd tell him the police would come and take him away. So that's the environment this guy grew up in. No school, no friends, no contact with the outside world, just a small room and a locked door and a woman who somehow managed to convince everyone that he'd just moved away. And here's the question everyone asks when they first hear this. How does this even happen? Because it's not just one bad person. It's a chain of failures stretching across 20 years. And if you think this shit is isolated, think again. This is just one that they found. The school noticed when he stopped showing up. They called child services. The Connecticut Department of Children and Families did a welfare check. Police knocked on the door, took one look around, and left. Keep in mind, he's 32 now. This was decades ago. Everything seems fine, the report said. That's it. One visit, case closed. Never mind, he never shows up again to school or anything. After that, nothing. The boy just vanished off every radar that's supposed to protect him. No follow-ups, no accountability, no one asking where he went. You could almost forgive one bureaucrat for missing the signs, but 2 decades? That's not one person dropping the ball. That's the entire system just taking a nap or working as directed. Fast forward to the day he's rescued. Sullivan gets arrested, charged with assault, kidnapping, unlawful restraint, cruelty to persons, reckless endangerment, the whole menu, all of it. I'll take one of each, please. You look at the affidavit and it's stomach turning. Police said he was almost dead when they found him. His organs were failing. He had open sores. He told them he hadn't had a shower in years. Years. So you think at that point this woman would be sitting in jail awaiting trial, right? Nope. Connecticut law says defendants have a right to bail unless they're an unmanageable danger or likely to flee. The judge set bond at $300,000. She paid it through a bondsman. Walked out wearing a GPS ankle bracelet. The prosecution fought it, but the judge said the conditions were enough. She's out, living that life of hers. And then she had the audacity to go back to the court complaining that the GPS monitor is a burden. Said it malfunctions too often. Wanted it removed. The judge, to his credit, said no. But the fact that she even thought that was worth asking after allegedly imprisoning someone for 20 years is kind of unbelievable. And then came Halloween, October 31st, the hearing that's making us take notes for all the wrong reasons. Sullivan's defense team filed a motion asking for the victim's new name and location. He's living under an alias in a protected setting. There's an attorney and trauma counselors. He doesn't want her to know where he is. She doesn't need to know where he is. Prosecutors said he's terrified. They said if she gets this information, it could put him in danger, because it could. They begged the judge not to release it. But the judge sided with Sullivan, with her, said her constitutional right to confront her accuser outweighed his right to safety. Well, that's sinking. The woman accused of keeping him locked away for half his life now knows where he sleeps. And yes, the judge did issue a warning. He said, if the address leaks to the press, whoever is responsible will face contempt charges. I think the judge should face charges at this point. But that doesn't undo what just happened. It doesn't erase the fear. It doesn't protect the man whose entire existence was already defined by fear. And why the F does this bitch need to know where he is? What confront your accuser means in this context is that her defense team has a right to know who's accusing her, where that person is, how to contact them for trial prep. It's supposed to protect the fairness of the trial, but there's a difference between fairness and insanity. This isn't some white-collar fraud case where both parties are walking in from equal footing. This is an alleged person an alleged abuser and her victim. There's no balance here. He's somewhere out there trying to piece together a life that never existed. He'll never be normal. He'll never be okay. He's learning how to eat again, how to sleep in a bed that doesn't have a lock on the door, how to live without waiting for footsteps in the hallway. And she's out here arguing about an ankle monitor and demanding his address. This isn't justice. This is bureaucracy wearing a blindfold and calling it fairness. And it's not like this is the first time the system has failed in this exact way. We've seen it over and over again. Children slipping through cracks so wide they could swallow a whole generation. Schools that don't follow up. CPS that can't find their own files. Judges who confuse procedure with morality. We love to say never again every time one of these cases hits the news. But the truth is, we say it so often, it's lost all meaning. Because never again requires change, and change requires accountability. You can't fix a system that won't even admit it's broken. And this judge, this court, handing over a victim's identity to a person accused of destroying his life, that's the system showing us exactly what it values. Order, procedure, the illusion of fairness. Not people, not victims. It's almost poetic in the worst way possible. A man spends 20 years locked in a room, forgotten by every adult who was supposed to protect him. He finally escapes. He burns the evidence of his prison to get help. And then 8 months later, the same machine that ignored him for 2 decades hands the keys right back to the person who allegedly built the cage. If it doesn't make your blood boil, you're not paying attention. And let's not forget, she's free because of money. If she didn't have access to that bond, she'd still be in a cell. So it's not just about justice. It's about who can afford freedom while awaiting it. The victim had no freedom for 20 years. She gets it back for 30 grand. I keep thinking about the way prosecutors described him, literally almost dead when he escaped. Almost dead. Think about what that means. The state has a living piece of evidence that someone can be erased in plain sight for 2 decades. That should have triggered every reform imaginable. CPS audits, new school tracking systems, anything. But here we are, still talking about GPS monitors and courtroom etiquette. And now there's a man somewhere out there who has to live with the knowledge that the person who kept him caged knows his name again. He has to trust the very same system that failed him to keep him safe. This case should be a turning point, the one that forces a reckoning. But if you can disappear in America for 20 years and the justice system still manages to side with your alleged captor, what hope is there for anyone else still trapped in silence? The idea that a judge could look at those facts, the filth, the starvation, the horror, and still say, well, she has rights too, is mind-bending. Of course she has rights, but at some point you have to stop hiding behind process and start using judgment, judge. Fairness isn't giving both sides a turn at the microphone. It's protecting the one who's already been broken and beaten nearly to death with the microphone. So let's call it what it is. This isn't a legal curiosity. It's a moral failure, top to bottom. From the day the boy vanished off the school rolls to the day the smoke finally drew help, to the courtroom moment when his freedom was compromised all over again. The next time someone says the system works, point them here, because this right here is what working looks like in this system when it's lost its humanity. It checks all the boxes, quotes all the laws, and still manages to betray the very people it is supposed to protect. Kimberly Sullivan is living her life right now, complaining about an ankle monitor. Her alleged victim is still learning what a life even is. And the court calls that balance. That's not balance. That's the definition of broken. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube, as always, love to hear them. Please, please do, share and hit subscribe while you're here to not miss our coverage of this and the many cases we're following. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.